You're dialed in to another episode of the Muley Freak Podcast.
We always dealt with grizzly bears, and living at the base of the Swan Range, we border national forests. And of course, we lived in the country. So I raised chickens and ducks and had a garden and did all that stuff. And we dealt with grizzly bears all the time. If you go on to Google and you type in Daniel Picard grizzly bear, you'll see that little young twerp Dan Picard shoots a grizzly bear in the chicken coop with a 20 gauge.
No, really?
Yes, yes.
Unscripted, real conversations about everything to do with Western big game hunting.
I think guiding a lot really helped me become a better hunter, just being on so many kills.
Yeah.
And then dealing with people. It's not easy to guide. You can only hunt as good as your hunter is if you're the guide, right? You can only go at their speed. And so learning to be adaptive.
Tips and tactics, opinions, where we've been, where we're going. Here's this week's episode.
Here's the thing about Dan. If you guys don't know Dan, he's like a silent behind the scenes guy. And he is and he isn't, because he's on the TV show. What's the name of it? Is it just Eastman's Hunting Journal on the Sportsman's Channel, right?
Yeah, Eastman's Hunting TV on Outdoor Channel.
Yep. Eastman's Hunting TV on the Outdoor Channel. And Dan, and remind me of the other bow hunter.
Brian Barney.
Brian, but no, I know Brian very well. But
Jordan Brashears.
Brashears, yeah, okay. Yep. So before Barney did any of the episodes, you and Brashears would do these bow hunts, and most of them were like DIY, over the counter. You did a bunch of elk hunts. No, I say a bunch. You did a few elk hunts and even a few black bear hunts in grizzly bear country and so on and so forth. And I don't know, man. Your style is very, very interesting to me, because you're on TV, but you're not like this like loud, like, hey, look at me, I'm a badass bow hunter. I like your style, and you're the type of people that really attract me.
Well, I appreciate that. It's kind of funny. I had this conversation with Ike, and we run as a team here at Eastman's. I mean, it's in our our mission statement, for crying out loud. But the one thing that I wanted to do by joining Eastman's is still being able to be myself. And okay, why do I bow hunt? I never set out in life to bow hunt on TV or be some TV personality. And so I still want to be true to myself, and I bow hunt for what I believe are the right reasons. And that's for me. That's got to be number one. If you don't bow hunt for you yourself, you're going to get burnt out. It's not going to work out. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, yeah, I just, I do my thing, and I have a lot of different coats that I wear here at Eastman's. I do it, every month there's something different. Obviously there's hunting season, but I do a lot of different things, from editing to writing to YouTube videos and everything in between. And so just the hunting for TV is just a small part of the job.
Right. But you and Brashears, and well, Barney now too, you predominantly do the Eastman's bow hunting TV.
Yep, for sure. That's why they brought me down here initially, was to be more of the bow hunter for the TV show.
Gotcha. Well, that's pretty exciting, man. I mean, that's saying something, that the Eastman fellas brought you down to do their bow hunting TV stuff. Like, that's saying something.
Yeah. No, I'm very lucky, very blessed to be in the position that I was in. And like most things in life that I'm sure you guys are well aware of, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Sure.
And before my life with Eastman's, I was a full-time hunting guide. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy with the steps, the process, and the things in my life that leading up to this allowed me to kind of fall into this job. You can't really explain it. I like to say it's a God thing, because I couldn't have planned this if I wanted to. You know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. How old are you?
I just turned 32.
Dude, we're the same age. Exact same age. And you grew up in Montana.
I did. Yep. Columbia Falls, up northwest Montana, Glacier Park. Yep. 25 years in Montana.
You poor sucker. It's like thick as can be up there.
I know. It's amazing. You go anywhere but northwest Montana and the hunting is better. Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got a lot of friends up there, namely the Proof group up there out of Columbia Falls. Well, I guess that's Columbia Falls.
Yep, for sure.
There's some other solid companies up there. Falcor Defense is up there, and
It's really, you know, the Defiance Actions. It's really blown up there, and a lot of the outdoor, all the industry stuff, manufacturers have popped up, and that's where they've made home. So it's pretty crazy to see how much the Flathead Valley has grown in the last 20 years.
Yeah, that is crazy. Now, you didn't do a lot of mule deer hunting over there, did you?
A fair amount. I grew up at the base of the Swan Range, which is on the east side of the Flathead Valley. And we grew up at the, I mean, our property was at the base of the mountain. And so I grew up hunting mule deer up there, and it's thick as can be. There's not a lot of deer. It's not great habitat. There was a burn that went through there on the Swans in 1919.
Oh, wow.
And it hasn't burned since. And so habitat is diminishing up there.
Right.
And it's hard for a mule deer to make a living up there. So there's just not a lot of them. So yeah, we'd kill mule deer up there every year. You never got anything giant, but, I shot a 183 buck with a rifle when I was 18.
That's a nice buck.
That's a big buck anywhere for sure. But we definitely had to work for them up in that country, because there's just not a lot of them.
Now, let me ask you this. Interesting. Flathead Valley. Now, anyone that knows anything about the Flathead Valley, now there's a lot of grizzly bear there. What was it like as a kid? Was there as many grizzly there, or was there more? And how did you kind of navigate and change maybe your hunting styles as a kid?
We always dealt with grizzly bears, and living at the base of the Swan Range, we border national forests, and of course we lived in the country, so I raised chickens and ducks and had a garden and did all that stuff, and we dealt with grizzly bears all the time. If you go on to Google and you type in Daniel Picard grizzly bear, you'll see that little young twerp Dan Picard shoots a grizzly bear in the chicken coop with a 20 gauge.
No, really?
Yes.
Like an adolescent?
A 20 gauge slug. I shot a grizz, and it was 2002, I believe. So
wow.
I grew up dealing with them, and obviously we had to be careful. I hunted a lot up the South Fork along Hungry Horse Reservoir, and it was just something that we grew up and dealt with. And we probably, as kids, we didn't do the right things. We didn't really take the precautions that we probably should have, but somehow we made it out alive.
Wow. So was there more now than there was then, or is it about the same?
I think it's about the same.
Okay.
6 years ago, there's always problem bears running around. 6 years ago, a sow and two cubs broke into my dad's garage. Like, the sow basically punched down my dad's overhead garage door.
Oh, jeez.
And stole his deer out of there.
Wow.
Stuff that happens in Alaska, it's the real deal. And they're shooting bears all the time.
Really?
FWP is. Yeah, the problem bears, they're relocating them. They're shooting them. And I think it's been bad. It's always been bad. And
sure.
Jeez. These bears, they end up in the Flathead Valley, and they relocate them, and they come back because there's so many orchards and there's so much livestock, and they just get habituated and they come back. And so, especially the east side of the valley, it's just problem after problem bear.
Sure.
Well, that's the tough thing too, that I've understood from the little that I know about grizzly bears, is that they're just such a rangy creature that they have no problem crossing four or five mountain ranges to get back to what they know is familiar. And, you know, I don't see how management can really handle relocating when it's such a problem like that. I mean, it's nothing for them to just come back to a valley. They know where there's food.
Yep.
They're going to make it happen.
They have the three strike rule up there, and they do anywhere in grizz country. But if they have to deal with a bear or a black bear three times, they get put down. But
really,
they would put problem bears 50 miles as the crow flies in the Bob Marshall, and they end up right back where they trapped them from because they get habituated to that food source.
That's crazy.
That is incredible.
That's a testament to, you know, what they can do as far as finding their home range and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And that bear I shot, it had a microchip in it, and it was, I think, on its second strike because the sow like killed a bunch of pigs or something, like full-blown Night of the Grizzly Massacre one night.
Really?
Yeah, just on Elk Park Road down to the south of us, and they relocated them way down into the Bob Marshall, and they showed up back in the same spot like 2 months later. I ended up shooting that one in the chicken coop, and then...
Did you know it was in there, or did you just go there to, hey, check the kitchen, or were you like, oh, I hear something, a ruckus?
Yeah, I want to hear this chicken coop story.
Wait, have you told this on a podcast before?
This is, I mean, I haven't told hardly anybody this. You guys are in for a treat. Yeah.
We got to hear this.
We got an exclusive here.
So, yeah, I mean, we dealt with bears growing up and skunks and foxes and coyotes killing the chickens, and it was just an ongoing battle. And so I just thought it was another routine varmint scare off up there. But the dog, I let her out one night. It was 10 o'clock and hackles raised, and she took off up there. And I grabbed the old 20 gauge and ran up after her, and we have a light on, and it's a big pole barn, and there's a light up there. And by time I got up there, she was running back down along the pole barn to me. As I turned the corner, she runs by me with a bear on her tail.
Oh, no way.
And so all I can see is the object, because it's casting shadows out into the open space there, and all I can see, it's an object. I had no idea it was a grizzly bear, but after I shot two times as fast as you can rack a shotgun shell through an 870. And I just remember like big flames coming out the end of the barrel because it's dark.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see anything.
Oh,
and I shot two times as fast as I could. I could hear that bear rolling around, and it took off, and I ran and took off, and my dad yells up there. He's like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, get up here. I just shot something. I had no idea. And so my dad loves to tell the story, of course, at family gatherings or during the holidays, on how much crap was in my pants after that whole scenario.
So let me ask you this. How big was the bear, and how old was she?
Yeah, so these were cubs. They're 2.5-year-old cubs, but the one I killed was 390 pounds.
A 2.5-year-old 390-pounder.
Yeah. Jeez. I mean, this thing was ridiculous, how big this thing was. We went back the next morning wandering around up on the mountain. We found this thing at the base of a hill laying on its back, and it just looked like, you know, you shoot like a one of those giant prairie dogs. It's just a roly-poly sucker.
Yeah, right. just belly dragging.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. It was just, this is a bear that had been eating grain and apples all fall, just unbelievably fat.
Wow.
That is
insane.
And
it was laying on its back, and we couldn't even move it, you know? And yeah, so, I mean, essentially it's a cub, 2.5 years old, 390 pounds. That's ridiculous.
That would have been a really big adult.
Jeez.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the sow, they ended up killing her. And I think she was 650 or something.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah, just giant old sow. And all those years of raiding livestock and orchards, you know, just getting huge.
That's insane.
So after you had the incident in the barn, you shot a couple times, and then you just kind of went back inside and kind of just spent the rest of the night on knowing that the bear problem was kind of over that night, or what did you think? I mean, did you know that there was...
Well, that night, Dad wanted to go look for the thing, so he grabs a 12-gauge, and we have a couple flashlights, and so we're stumbling up the mountain, and we can hear it up there. I mean, it's brushy as heck up there, and we can hear it stumbling around and breaking. I mean, and I was like, let's get out of here, Dad. I'm a freshman in high school, just a little 5'3", 130-pound twerp.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. Did you know it was a grizzly, or did you think maybe it was a black bear? Or?
No idea. Yeah, I had no idea. So, you know, we go back to the house, and of course I'm wide-eyed all night, and all that stuff is running through your mind, like, okay, maybe it's just a black bear and we can tag it tomorrow and call it good, that it's going to be a, you know, just a problem black bear.
Right.
And we did talk to FWP before this all happened, and they're like, oh, there's no grizzly bears in your area. That's what they told us. Boy. So they're like, well, just go ahead and shoot it. It was during bear season. It was October 30th. And so they were like, just go ahead and shoot it and tag it. You know, problem bear, you know, black bear, you're good to go.
Right.
And so that's what we hoped for. And that's what we were thinking. You know, we're like, oh, it's probably a black bear. But yeah, we get up and we find it's a grizzly bear and I have to go to school the next day.
Oh boy.
And so all these things are running through your mind. I mean, this is a federally protected species, federal offense. You're like, do we throw this thing in the river? Do we bury
right.
it?
Yeah, right.
What do we do? You know, what do you do? And so the game wardens, I mean, we ended up just calling the game wardens immediately and they came out and did a whole investigation and interviews. And
still scary. I mean, they're questioning you and, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, you know, a freshman, what is that, like 13, 14 years old? I drew a late season Gardner cow elk hunt. That was going to be my first elk hunt. And I was like, they're going to take my elk hunt away.
Well, and that's the hard part too, because with it being a federally protected species, the burden of proof that you have got to, I mean, not necessarily present a case, but it falls on you to like, hey, it was a real self-defense incident. You know, it wasn't just, I stepped out on the back porch and was popping off on this grizz, you know, and as a young right. kid, I can only imagine that being nerve-wracking.
Oh yeah. Cause we just, I don't know. You didn't really hear of any of those situations turning out in favor of, you know, the guy with the gun.
Right. Right.
And it was so new then. And yeah, luckily up in the Flathead, it's pretty conservative. We had a good county attorney and everything. Luckily we didn't have a wacko in there. Cause you don't know. I mean,
yeah, you don't know.
County attorney, you could get roasted, you know? Yeah.
So you didn't get any kind of infraction, did you?
No. So long story short, after the investigation, they're like, oh, it's a classic case of self-defense. And you yeah. know why we're saddened by the loss of a sow grizzly bear. We're even more happy that we didn't lose the life of a kid. And so yeah. that it was on the news and everything. And that was that. And I didn't get any hate mail or anything like that.
Oh, that's
and,
good.
And so, yeah.
You would now, but.
you want to know if I was the judge, Dan, this is what I would have thought. You know, the first thing that would have clued me off that it wasn't a purposeful kill. You used a 20 gauge.
yeah, no, exactly. 20 like, gauge slug.
Yeah, 20 gauge. Like, okay, that might have been. He wasn't obviously. He yeah. wasn't just like going out to smoke a grizz that night. But
yeah, and we have. I mean, I don't know how many skunks and coyotes that I've chased off and shot up there.
Yeah.
Well,
and so
well, here's what boggles my mind. The whole time you're telling this story, I'm thinking, no, he's going to the chicken coop with BB shot.
Oh right. Yeah, no.
I'm like, slug, how did you just happen to have slug? Do you shoot slug at skunk? Like, I grew up similar to you a little bit, like chickens, lived out in the country,
got all sorts always of critters.
Protect, yeah, always protect foxes, grabbing chickens, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I'm like, man, I never shot slugs at them. That's for sure.
Yeah, you're right.
So
yeah.
Why did you have a slug in there?
Yeah, we had always had bear problems, and so you I never see. Know.
Yeah.
You never know. Smart. I mean, I shot that grizzly at 20 feet, and so. If you were to, and I never encountered a bear up there, like face to face like that, but it's just kind of an insurance policy. Like, I'm a little kid. I'm not going to pack a 12 gauge, but if I go up there and I'm shooting something in the chicken coop, right. if it were to be a bear, I need something more than like bird shot, right. you know? And so that was the reasoning behind it, is my dad felt it was just a little more safer option because you just don't know what you're going to run into up there.
Yeah. That's so funny, the difference of growing up, because even me growing up, the gun of choice, if you were to go out and deal with something that was out in the chicken coop, was just a 22.
Yep.
The old deuce, because no matter what, you knew no matter what was out there, it wasn't going to be big enough to shuck a 22.
Right. Exactly.
I bet you were a legend. You were a 130-pound legend.
It was actually hilarious, like when it all came out, like in high school, like how many people wanted to be my friend and go running with me.
Dude, if Facebook or Instagram were around there, you'd have 100,000 followers.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. How many, be honest, Dan, how many people bought you beers because of that story?
Oddly enough, it hasn't really came out. I don't really talk about it, and it comes up sometimes at shows or something, talking to buddies and a few. But back in the day, I mean, I was, like I said, I was a freshman, and so it was mostly like I want to go hunting with you, or let's go shoot prairie dogs or be BFFs or whatever. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Freshman kids did back then.
Yeah. I bet you didn't get like hazed because you were like just the man.
Yeah, no, it was.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, dude, is like, it wouldn't matter where I applied for a job in that town. I would have got it as a kid.
That's awesome. Yeah.
People were just loving
you. You still put that on resumes now?
Grizzly bear tally mark, right? Yeah, there.
Exactly. So funny. I know it's kind of a random question, but after it was all said and done, did they figure out where you hit the bear?
Yes, absolutely. So that was a part of the autopsy and the investigation. And so the initial shot, the first shot, traveled right down along the face of the bear, broke the collarbone, and they found the slug like down in the guts.
Dang. Oh, really?
And so, yeah, it was obviously a frontal shot. And then the second shot, I sank it right into the side of that thing, like in front of the hips, kind of a gut shot. That's probably why it didn't die very quick.
Jeez. I bet that thing would have like ran you over, not on purpose. Because absolutely. It was chasing
just
your dog.
Just trying to get out of
that,
there, yeah.
That would have been like a semi-truck hitting you.
yep, absolutely. You know, right place, wrong time, or however you want to put it.
Oh, my gosh. And I don't think it would have known it hit you because it was so focused probably. I mean, I don't know. I didn't see how it was running. It was dark. But I bet it was so focused on, like, chasing your dog. If you would have somehow got between that dog, and you just got bulldozed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Holy cow.
So let me ask you this. Like, you have that crazy story. How has that affected the way you hunt in grizzly bear country? Because you have some, that, you know.
It's a good question.
I had some issues for a few years after that, like walking in the dark, going elk hunting up in the South Fork and, you know, bad dreams and stuff like that. And it took me probably 5 years to really get over it.
Right.
Because, yeah, I mean, it goes to your head that you're going to run into something in the dark and you can't see what's going on. And the thing is going to, you know, eat you like a chicken wing or something.
Right.
And so, you just don't know. And I guess now, I mean, geez, it's almost been 20 years ago. I sound old saying that.
Right.
But yeah, it's 2002. So yeah, 16 years ago, I think. And, it's totally different now. I hunt differently and I hunt more open country, and I'm obviously really careful because I've had that face to face encounter. And so I know what it's like. And so I am very careful with how I navigate and walk around thick country that has grizzly bears. And quite frankly, that stuff, Northwest Montana, Northern Idaho, I don't hunt that stuff number one anymore, just because there's not a lot of ungulates up there.
Sure.
But I don't, I hunt open country now. And that's kind of one of the reasons. And so that, you know, the hunting grizzly bears in Wyoming, that the YouTube, the Beyond the Grid video that I did, I hunt like that all the time. Open country, there's lots of bears around still. And I sleep with my 44 right next to my bed. And my camera guy has a sawed off 12 gauge next to his bed. And it's a legit fear, but you just got to be careful. And hopefully you're not the next one that gets chomped. I mean, frick, guys are dying every year. It's getting crazy out there.
I know, yeah, man. Every fall, it seems like there's those crazy news articles that come out. And man, it just...
You know how many bears Wyoming Game and Fish killed this year? Problem grizzly bears. Take a guess.
10.
Yeah, that's I'll say 10 or about 10-ish.
10 or 11. 52.
Holy
52.
Shit.
Wow. And people are like, oh, we don't have a problem. And like, personally, guys, I think the judge that shut down the grizzly bear should be responsible for that guy's death, that guide in Jackson.
That
is so, it's so absurd out there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, how many tags were they wanting to allot for the season anyway?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Was it six?
Yeah. Six or eight.
Such
something.
A minuscule number compared to 50, 52, you said?
52.
Holy shit.
Think of the money that could have been generated for conservation had they, you know,
amen to that.
Turn hunters on that. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous that.
I bet they have over $1 million in grizzly bear removal killing 52. I mean, you know how the government works. You know how extensive this stuff is.
Oh, yeah. It's. Wow.
That's crazy. No, I would have never guessed.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I did see an article that they are either trying to or they did reinstate the hunt for this coming fall.
I think you have a bogus article.
Did I?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything like that. The state of Wyoming, they passed an amendment, a state amendment.
To ship into California, right?
That would be nice, dude.
Yeah, let's get Golden Gate Bridge. They need to be back in their native range.
Basically, it's an amendment that says that the federal government doesn't have a right or any say in how the state of Wyoming manages grizzly bears.
Yeah, who cares what a federal judge says? Why does he have any authority to tell what the state has? The states are in control themselves.
Why does a federal judge have any say in wildlife management? Absolutely blows my mind. Obviously, it's a broken system. But here's the kicker. The states can do whatever they want, but any federal law or federal court trumps state law. And so is it actually going to do anything? Theoretically, technically, no. But I don't know. Is it going to be one of those things that the feds aren't going to battle? I don't know either. So it'll be interesting the next couple of years on how things pan out. But I would be shocked within the next 3 years if there isn't a grizzly hunt and grizzly bears are being killed legally. I don't know. I mean, it can only be political so long. You know how the wolf deal was. It took a while. But
Oh, yeah. And I would think that wolves are more esteemed for, you know, tree huggers than grizzlies. I would honestly think that.
Yeah, I would think so too. And now, I mean, especially in Montana, I mean, floodgates are open. It's pretty much open season all the time. Idaho's even better.
Right. But, oh yeah. Idaho's great. Yeah,
state control. And there's plenty of wolves and grizzly bears out there, that's for sure.
So let me ask you this. I think Ike packed you in on was it 2 years ago or three?
Archery elk. 2016. Yep.
I'm pretty sure it was a draw unit.
Correct.
I'm pretty secretive where I hunt, so we don't have to talk about that. But that was pretty dope. You're face to face with a sow? I mean, not face to face, but I mean, you had a standoff at about 1,500 yards with one.
Yeah, the sow, it was a young one and it was on a carcass.
It was on a carcass.
Yeah, and it was 150 yards away and it was like a heifer, like a moo cow, summer grazing area. And so
did it kill it or just die?
I don't know. I mean, that's pretty muddy in there. It probably just died in there. I don't know. And sure. So that bear didn't want to leave. And like I said, there's bears everywhere. I mean, I was up hunting the same area this year with some friends and there was another sow with two cubs on an elk carcass and they don't care. I mean, they're so used to humans. They don't care. But when they're on a carcass, so they have a heifer in the friggin' mud, that's A-okay with me because they're occupied. They have a food source. They're not going to mess with me.
Yeah. Unless they feel threatened, I guess.
Right. And so, yeah, you keep your distance and you run a clean camp and, you know, sleep with your weapons under your pillow is about all you can do. And I don't know, I've never had a problem, but
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you were to give advice to somebody that was coming up, maybe this coming fall to hunt grizzly bear country, and they were kind of trying to reassess what they're going to do as far as precaution, what kind of advice would you give somebody?
I would have both forms of protection, bear spray and a pistol. And I don't think many people realize how difficult it is to shoot a charging grizzly bear with a pistol effectively. Right. And there are situations where they'll save your butt and there's situations that bear spray will too. But a lot of this open country, it's so windy up there. Good luck deploying bear spray and getting it to be effective.
Yeah.
But the only way that's going to happen is if the wind's at your back, because it's always windy in that open country.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if you're in grizzly country, if you're a non-resident, I would – obviously, if you go in the wilderness, you have to have a guide or a resident guide to go with. But keep your head on a swivel and stay away from tight cover and, I mean – pack some sort of protection. That's all you can really do. Still, if you're in the right place at the wrong time, you're still in deep doo-doo, but
right. So that elk hunt, was there a ton of grizzly in there? You obviously ran into that one on the carcass, but
you always see bears. If you don't see one every day, you see tracks.
I see.
And so the whole South Fork, North Fork of the Shoshone, Crandall, it's all just, there's grizzlies everywhere. And especially that South Fork, it's nasty in there with bears. They're everywhere.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I know a lot of guys that'll say, you know what? I absolutely will not hunt grizzly bear country anymore.
Yeah, no, for sure. And a lot of guys are doing that. Even residents here, everybody applies for elk tags up in the Bighorn Mountains, and they go elk hunt over there because they don't want to play the grizzly bear game.
They're just over it.
Yep, over it. Oh, over it. And I don't blame them.
Me neither.
I love good elk hunting, and it's like, yeah, I'll risk my life for good elk hunting, I guess. But a lot of people are just like, nope, not doing it.
Huh, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and I can see that being a limit that people are setting. And I mean, that not only does that affect the way they hunt, but that also affects how deep they go in and hunt. And then you're going to see a direct effect in how many animals are actually harvested. And it's just, it's hard to manage when fishing game doesn't necessarily factor in guys that don't go in and harvest because of the fear for bears. I mean, it's, right. You know,
right.
That's tough to manage. I have no idea how to.
It is. It's a different breed that hunts those units too. A lot of that stuff, it's wilderness or backcountry, and the horse guys that hunt it, you know, they'll always bring dogs with them. And that's about probably the best defense you can have, is have a cow dog with you in camp. And they'll always let you know if there's bears coming in, and they have dogs riding with them all the time.
And smart. So
that's probably your best defense. And so most of the guys that hunt that backcountry stuff are horsemen. It's so vast back there, and the day hikers or the day hunters, it's pretty hard to do that sort of hunt in that type of country. And so it's horse hunters mostly, and it's, like I said, it's a different breed for sure.
Hmm. Nice. Let me ask you this. What hunts do you kind of have lined up for this year, bow hunts?
Everything is dependent on the draws, of course, and I always have generals, but Wyoming general elk is always number one. Of course, Wyoming general deer in western Wyoming is always my go-to.
I didn't know you went out west.
Yeah, in western Wyoming, yeah, for sure. I always hunt that high country out there every year, and I'll do something different. I'll scout it too, and I mean, you guys know that country in G&H.
Oh, yeah.
It's very popular stuff. I hunt it every year, and I like to explore and spend as much time as possible as I can in that country for, probably 6 days. I'll hunt till September 6th, or obviously until I kill something, and then probably move on to elk by the 10th or so.
Nice.
That's nice for you, though, because, like, you probably don't have to get back and create content or YouTube videos or answer emails. Like, your job is to hunt those probably 3 weeks in September, right?
Exactly. Nice. I have hunts from starting in mid-August with antelope hunts, depending on what I draw, of course. And then by the time I get into October, I'm filming for Guy or Beyond the Grid, and I'm wrapping up. I think I did 16 hunts this year, wrapping up with a buffalo hunt in December.
Oh, man.
And so it's nonstop. You start the beginning of the season, and you're a little overwhelmed by how much you have going. But it's, as you guys know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So one day at a time.
One hunt, one day at a time, man.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, fall's really busy. I try to do the spring stuff too. I did New Zealand and Australia last spring, and I'm going down to Texas for Audad in a few weeks here.
Bow hunt?
Yeah, all bow hunting. Yeah,
have you done that bow hunt Audad yet?
I haven't.
I hear it's tough.
Yeah, everybody I've talked to says, oh, you're not going to get one.
Well, good luck.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they really take it seriously. But, I mean, that's why we bow hunt, too. Everybody loves a good challenge. And so, it's something new for me. I've never hunted Texas, and that's what I love doing is branching out and hunt as many species as I can, as all over the world as I can. And that's just kind of my thing. I love it.
Well, and when you start to open up your opportunities like that, I mean, your hunting seasons just get longer and longer. There's really no off season. You can hunt, you know, damn near year round if you plan it right.
Yep. Absolutely. With the hunts in Arizona and in January, coos, desert mule deer, javelina, and then all these spring hunts. And I'm going to do Hawaii again this year. I think eighth year in a row I've done that. And so I'm always hunting. When I'm not hunting for work, I'm hunting for vacation.
Yeah. Right. That's funny. So what island are you doing there? Are you doing the Big Island or are you doing Maui?
I've never hunted the Big Island.
Okay.
Maui, I've hunted a lot. I've got some good friends there, so I hunt Maui a lot. Lanai, I've done Kauai quite a bit, but I love Maui. Big bucks there, lots of deer, and it's all private there where the good deer hunting is.
Yeah,
and
that's tough. That's what I hear. I got a few buddies over there also.
Yep, yep. But if you spend time over there, there's always somebody, you can find somebody that will get you hooked up with something over there. And so there's always, you know, connections to be had, and it works out pretty good. My buddies over there, they come over here to hunt, and then they take me hunting when I'm over there. And so it's a lot of fun. That's one of my favorite things to do, is just kind of do the swap hunt thing.
Yeah, that's a good, cool. That's a good way to trade. I like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Right on. For sure. No, that's awesome. What about spring bear?
Yeah. I'll be doing that this year. Montana. I've been, man, in Wyoming, I hunt up in the Bighorn Mountains in Wyoming, and the quota closes so quick.
Oh, there's a quota up there?
Yeah. And there's a lot of bears up there. There's a lot of smaller bears, and you can bait here in Wyoming. And so a lot of them get shot early because their color phases guys come out, you know, with the outfitters and stuff, they end up killing sows their color phases because these guys want to get their color phase, and it shuts the season down in by the end of May. And so you don't really get to hunt the rut, you know, when those boars are cruising in June with my favorite time to hunt. And so you don't really get that. And so I grew up bear hunting in Montana, you know, in the Gallatin, south of Bozeman there, Paradise Valley and that stuff. And so I'm going to do some hunting up there this year as well. And then we'll see what the quota does in Wyoming and kind of hunt my honey holes if the quota stays open. Huh, so
right on. I think that's a perfect segue. I mean, we're doing a series called Bear Wars, which is essentially a digital project where we're going to be more or less shedding light on the different methods of bear hunting along with some of the conservation. So it's going to be pretty cool. We have season one filmed, and we'll be filming season two. But I've been interested in Wyoming, and gosh, dude, they care a lot about their black bears. I mean, they're 350, I think, for an out of state for
right.
Yeah. I'm like, holy cow.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah. Thinking about it with the quotas and stuff. And I mean, it's all quota. Some of them don't fill in the springtime, that is. And most of the bears are over in western Wyoming, you know, in the Grays River and that stuff. That's where most of the bears get killed.
I was just going to ask you that. Do you run into a lot of over there in west?
When I'm mule deer hunting, I'm so high, I don't run into too many. I shot one this fall when I was mule deer hunting, oddly enough, on September 2nd.
Oh, wow.
The thing was up at 10,000 feet running around like a wild banshee looking for those pine nut caches.
Oh, really? Did you get that on film?
Oh, yeah.
How come I haven't seen these newest? Are they just...
Yeah, I mean, they'll be out on the TV show or be on the grid coming up here on YouTube. But yeah, it was wild this year. This bear was cruising around up the cliffs, down the cliffs, and way up high. And I walked over to it, and it saw me, and I got to 40 yards, and I just kind of, you know, kissed at it with my doing a little predator call, and the thing came in and turned broadside and let him have it.
No kid.
Big bear?
No, not a big bear. Probably like 5'5", 5'6".
3-4-year-old?
Yeah, probably four, yeah. No, actually, what they aged it, I think he said six.
Six, huh?
But Wyoming, we don't get big bears. Like a 6'5" bear would be giant for Wyoming.
Really?
We don't have the berries, so we don't have huckleberries or blueberries or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And obviously, growing season is so short here.
Oh, yeah.
And so feed isn't fantastic for black bears in Wyoming. Montana is much better. Get bigger bears in Montana for sure, especially with the berries.
Yeah, they grow some pumpkin heads in Montana.
Yep. I've killed all my bigger bears in Montana. And in Wyoming, if you get a 6-foot bear, I mean, that's solid. Like, congratulations. That's a giant for Wyoming.
Right. Huh.
Yeah, so, it's a little different, but it's the style of hunting. I love the spot and stock, and you get in on these boars courting sows, and it's super exciting, and it's a rush. It's some of my favorite hunting for sure.
Yeah, no, I saw a film where I think you shot one across the creek that was like walking towards you. Was that a Montana bear?
That's a Wyoming bear.
That's a Wyoming bear. Okay.
Yeah, that was crazy. We kind of cut some of it because it got so graphic, but I shot that thing in the shoulder, and it was just spraying blood, and it was staying on its feet. So I was like, I'm not going to shoot it again. And I was like, well, heck, thing's on its feet still. So I load another arrow, and it's like hobbling up the far side. And we didn't show this, but I sent another arrow. I think it was like 52, and it just hit it square in the middle of the back.
Oh, you spied him?
Yeah. And right when I hit it, it just let out a ridiculous roar and all this blood spray out its mouth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it like rolled down the hill backwards, death moaning, and died right there. I mean, you saw it. It was like one of the most intense kill scenes I've ever experienced.
Wow. Yeah, they probably can't show that too much of that on TV, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I love to keep it real and show the real stuff, but how graphic do you want it?
Yeah, there comes a point of diminishing return when it comes to a kill shot.
Yeah, and the Outdoor Channel, they have their standards.
Certain
too.
Policies,
you have to abide by. So, yeah, pretty wild, though.
I shot an antelope this year that was unbelievable. I do a lot of, as well as bow hunting, I do a lot of long-range stuff, and I shot this antelope at, I don't know, 650 or something, and hit it right in the heart, and I can't believe it stayed on its feet, and it was literally buckets. I didn't think an antelope had that much blood.
Really?
In fact, my buddy's like, oh my gosh. He's like, oh. Like, he was getting sick. I'm like, you're getting sick right now. I was just, and the recoil kind of bumped me out of the scope, so I couldn't quite see it all, and they're just like, oh my gosh. And we have it recorded, so I can just hear the reaction of everyone that saw it. Anyway, yeah, you can't show that stuff. I mean, even on YouTube, I'm learning that, like, I'd like to keep it as real as possible also, but I'm tired of responding to all the, with all due respect, idiotic people.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, there's a fine balance, too, between keeping it real and presentation. I mean,
That's the truth.
It's as true as it gets, but.
Yeah. You got to have it, leave it somewhat tasteful. And it's like, you know, stuff that you show your hunting buddies or guys in your circle that you show the real stuff to, like that. But Yeah.
To the proper audience. Yep.
Exactly.
Dan, how did you come to, how did you land at Eastman's? What brought you there?
It was all guiding. I started guiding for an outfit out of Norris, Montana, which is west of Bozeman. And actually Jordan Brashears, he was he's a contractor, but he was a fill-in guide for a week, and he was riding for Eastman's at the time. Mm-hmm. And I guided with him for that week, and he's like, hey, dude, I mean, Eastman's are going to give me a chance to do some bow hunting for the TV show, but I need to find a camera guy. And like, I think you'd be a perfect fit for this. And I was like, sign me up, dude. Absolutely.
Nice.
I'll be a camera guy.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I've done it all growing up and everything, and it's right up my alley. And so it's kind of another crazy story, but I applied for a bunch of tags that year, and I applied for Western Wyoming as a non-resident. And I remember like freaking out. I applied in the special, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I paid $600 for a deer application.
Right.
That was idiotic. And anyway, I drew the tag, and we started hunting that fall, and I shot that 210 buck that year.
I didn't know you shot a 210 buck.
Yeah. Shot a giant that year. That was at the start of the season. And guy was like, hey, if you guys get 4 kill shots or, you know, make 4 TV shows on camera, I'll give you a bonus. And so I hunted with Jordan and filmed with him probably from September 1 to October 15th or 16th. And we ended up with 6 kills on video between us. Wow. And
so do you guys film each other?
We did. Yes. Okay.
But not now. You don't do that now.
Yeah. Not now at the time. And like I said, Jordan, he's a contractor. And so he never really considered, well, he may have considered moving down to Wyoming to work for Eastman's full time, but he just kind of did, you know, side work for him, basically just a 1099 type deal. And so after that fall, they're like, hey Dan, you want a job down here? And I was like, yep. And so I moved down that next spring, and I mean, the rest is history.
So basically just being a killer got you the job.
Well, yeah, that helped.
But that helped.
I think guiding a lot really helped me become a better hunter, just being on so many kills.
Yeah.
And then dealing with people. It's not easy to guide, and you can only hunt as good as your hunter is if you're the guide, right? You can only go at their speed. And so learning to be adaptive was very important. And so I really developed as a hunter and as a person, as a whole. And so I think just my maturity level was peaking, and I was really getting the hunting down, and my bow hunting really, it was just like the clash of everything, just maturity, I think. And so, yeah, I got lucky. I was 25, I think, and right place, right time, and knew the right people.
I've kind of started just to realize that about guiding and how good of an opportunity it is to just be exposed. I mean, you've probably heard the theory of the 10,000 hours.
Yep.
To master a certain skill or something. Yep. And it's, you know, as a guide, I think just the exposure, you don't even need to have a tag or have a weapon in your hand, but the exposure to that kind of stuff is invaluable.
Exactly.
And you can really tell. You know, there's some guys that are lucky enough that don't guide, but they still acquire that time in the field. And it's just, you can tell that it rolls into just an amazing library of expertise and knowledge.
Absolutely. And there's no shortcuts for it. You just have to get out there and do it and get the experience. And that's why the guiding thing, I mean, I think I was on 12 bull kills the 1 year, and just, I mean, a lot of like 12 bulls is a lifetime of hunting for a lot of people.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
More 10, might be 10 lifetimes for most people.
For sure. Yep. For sure. So yeah, it's all experience. That's all it is. People are like, wow, you're so successful. How do you do it? And it's like, well, if you did something for the amount of time and effort that I put into this, you would get really good at it too. It's just my thing. And I choose to spend a ton of time at it. And so, yeah, you happen to be more successful than not, but it's all because of hard work.
Right. Absolutely. No, I mean, so Jordan, you two predominantly appear on Bowhunting TV, right?
Yep.
Do you split the episodes? How does that work? And he's only part-time then, is what I'm understanding?
Yeah. I mean, with his busy schedule, he doesn't do as much with us anymore. So he'll do like maybe an episode or two a year.
I see.
And so he doesn't do too much. And then Brian Barney, he'll get on there for an episode or two a year as well.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm kind of saying. It's cool. It's cool that you have, you know, a few different faces though. I mean,
yeah. No, and you have to, when we do, I think 26 new shows and we have to have 9 bow shows. Like I can't do that in 1 year, 9 episodes. It's just, there's not enough time in a year to make 9 shows.
And not only time, but then you're talking about tag allotment and scheduling and, you know,
well, you still got to go home and shoot content and write articles spend time with your family and your wife.
Exactly.
Yeah. So much going on. And as you guys know, it's bow hunting. And so it's never 100% success either. Yeah.
Never.
So it's just the nature of the game. And so, yeah, you just, if you want to get 9 episodes, you got to go on 14 or 15 hunts.
Right. Right. So, you know, what's really interesting, this is probably one of the podcasts, one of the podcasts I've, not that I haven't looked forward to others, cause I've really looked forward to a lot of others. Like we've talked to Brian, we've talked to some special people in the industry, but this was what I was really looking forward to. And reason being is like, I can't believe more people, well, then you are a big deal because there probably is a lot of people that talk about you, but I mean, I just not like my personality, Dan, I'm not one of those fanboys. Like there's people in the industry that have done a lot and everyone wants to be like so-and-so or everyone wants to look up to this guy. Like,
man,
you're one of those guys that I think more people should look up to. Not loud, has a family, maybe doesn't have a big following on social media, but probably one of the most lethal bow hunters that there is.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. And like I said, I am true to myself and it's not about the followers or whatever. I bow hunt for me and I think longevity looks really good for me to do this a long time and not get burned out, because this is something, especially hunting for TV or hunting for work, as you know too, Eric.
Oh yeah.
That it's totally different. It's just not like hunting with the boys anymore.
No, dude, it's not. It's like, and honestly, I've gotten to the point where I want to kill mature animals, right? I want to, you need less and less meat when you have that many tags, and you know, sure, you can share it with family and friends and whatnot and take a few into work and cook them for whoever else. But I mean, you got to love it. And when you do it for work, you got to manage that burned out factor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think I had close to 15, 16, 17 tags last year, and I was smoked. So it's interesting that you've brought up now, or at least touched on 2 or 3 times, not getting burned out. And it's because of your passion for it, you know? And
Absolutely.
A lot of times I'm like, man, I'm going to get something on the ground because I want to go home. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if you ever get like that, or if you're like, you know what? I don't care how long it takes me. I'm looking for a specific type of animal, not score necessarily, but you're like, you know, I'm looking for a specific type of animal. I'm going to stay out here for 10 days if I have to. Are you of that mindset? Or are you like, you know what? I'm filming for TV. I want to kill something mature. I want a good shot. And then I want to get home. Or what's kind of your mindset there? I'm curious.
Yeah. Yeah. As you know, it's the mental game is where it's at. It's very difficult. And so every hunt is a little bit different, but I kind of have standards for myself. It's my own personal thing. And for elk, it's a 6x6, nothing smaller. It's just what I want to do personally. And I think it's best for TV and best for everything. Okay. So 6x6 elk, 4x4 mule deer. Obviously there's exceptions. If it's a 3x4, the size, I'm not that picky. I'm a bow hunter, for crying out loud. And right. So yeah, I'm not going to look at a, you know, a 160 type 3x4 and not shoot it. Any bow hunter is going to shoot it, especially on a general tag.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, yeah, it's all a quality animal for the show. There's no shortcuts really. And so I've done this 5 years now. And so I just have the process and I kind of get into robot mode a little bit.
Yeah. I'm sure you've learned efficiencies like, okay, if I got this amount of gear, it's already packed, ready to go. I'm not so stressed like coming from hunt to hunt because I've got my stuff dialed. I can spend more time with my family. And I know it's only going to take, like my buddy Joan in Alaska, he's like, I can pack for sheep hunting in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And a week sheep hunt in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get your gear and everything, and me, it's like, man, I don't know where my spotter is because I put it in 10 different spots. I hunt for one item for an hour and then my wife asks me something, then I'm mad and I'm ornery. And so I need to get my stuff more.
I've been witness to this because not only is he searching for stuff at his house, he's searching for stuff in his car here at the shop at the Muley Freak warehouse. He's looking for
Where's this? You know, I'm of the entrepreneurial mindset and I'm kind of a creative. I kind of have a creative mind and, you know, as well as marketing mind. So like I'm always thinking of ideas and like my mind's constantly going. So I'll take a 2 ibuprofen and I won't remember if I took them. So I'm like, oh wait, not sure if I took those or I better not take any. You know what I'm saying? These guys are talking to me and they're like, hey, I've been trying to call you or get your tent. And like, I don't even know.
Yeah, I want to make that clear too. Like I said, I've been doing this for 5 years. I still have a process, but dude, I forget stuff all the time too. Like it's impossible. You can't do so many irons in the fire and go and this hunt, that hunt. You can't not forget something.
Gosh,
dude, yeah. I'm convinced that that after watching a couple seasons, but Randy Newberg's got the setup. Man, he just pulls all his shit around in an enclosed trailer. But then he's gone for a month at a time. That's not feasible for most guys. But it's a
that helps having everything in one. Like imagine like taking your house with you everywhere.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And a lot of my hunts, you know, I'm hunting out of the truck or my gear's in the truck. Sometimes I have to switch vehicles, and so I mean. Holy smokes.
Well, all my hunts are so different too. Like, you know, an antelope hunt, that's mostly a truck hunt. Well, if you want a backpack antelope hunt, well, go ahead. I guess it'll make you look, you know, more hardcore than the next guy. But like, you need different gear for every type of hunt. So, like an antelope hunt, you're going to take an 85 spotter. Well, you're going to the high country. Well, you're going to take a 65, you know. Yep. And you might have two different backpacks for the occasion. So, that's my problem. I think my hunts are so diverse that I don't have the same gear for every hunt. And it's a little crazy. Like, we did the high country, Tyler and I, last year, and that film will probably drop pretty soon. But I didn't have my headlamp. They're like, how could you forget a headlamp? I'm like, oh, man, real easy, okay?
Yep.
I forgot a filter, I think. So I was borrowing their filter. I'm like, well, I knew you guys would have it.
Is that the one where you didn't take enough food, too? Is
that the same? I didn't have enough food either. Yeah, I was starving. I was eating their dust chips out of their Ziplocs, licking them.
So it was kind of funny. That was probably last year that we did the episode with Brian, right? With Brian Barney.
Yeah, probably.
We did a gear episode with Brian Barney and just kind of sitting down. And it was funny to sit and watch because we're going through that episode and Brian's giving us all his gear tips and stuff. And every once in a while I'd look over and I'd see light bulbs go off in Eric's head like, oh, yeah.
That's a better way to do that.
That makes more sense.
Well, I think, and you probably don't hunt with a lot of people anymore, but for me, hunting with other seasoned tenured hunters you learn from them. Not only their hunting and their style and their strategy, but also their kit, right?
Yeah.
What they're using, yeah.
Yeah, like this guy's not even a hunter, but one of the cameramen that came along with us, his name's Chase. He's a fireman in Boise. He had banana chips. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Did you bring
banana, dried banana chips? I'm like, you're a genius.
Yep. Yep.
And they were delicious.
Yeah, I would say most everything in my pack, especially the food items, it wasn't my idea.
That's tough. Dude, when I grew up hunting, I had like, you know, peanut butter sandwiches. Heck, I think my dad even packed mason jars of peaches.
Yep,
I'm like, this probably weighed 4 pounds, and he had 4 pounds of peaches in his bag. Like, we didn't know what we were doing.
Yep. No, absolutely. That's funny too, because I love canned peaches. When I work for the Forest Service, it's all about the canned peaches in the backcountry. So if I'm going on a feasible hunt where it's not too physical, a can of peaches is definitely going in my pack, and I don't care how much it weighs, it's coming in there, and that's like the lifesaver food for me.
That's awesome, man. That's so funny. Yeah. Well, we need to have you on again. I feel like there's a lot more we could obviously talk about, and we're just scratching the surface here with you. How long have we been going now?
Yeah, it's been an hour.
Holy cow, that was the fastest hour. Yeah, man. I mean, that's cool. I've always kind of watched your hunts, and I don't know. It's been interesting following you, and you're definitely a successful hunter, and keep it up.
I will, absolutely. I appreciate it. I really do. And it's nice talking to guys, you know, from the TV show, and they're like, oh, you do a good job, and I love your style. And yeah, that's kind of the motivation that you need when we're out there, for me anyway, is seeing guys that really appreciate, because they know how much work it really is.
Oh, dude, it's so much work.
And so that's
getting
the drive.
Hunt on film, especially a bow hunt with a kill shot, is so hard.
yeah, and then so hearing that feedback, I really appreciate it, and that's some of the gets that fire going under me a little bit more, and it's like that, you know, that's why I do it, because guys can relate and they know how hard I work out there, and those are the guys that, you know, really know what it takes and how much effort it takes to put together a good show out there.
Absolutely. Well, we should circle up after bear season and kind of maybe have you back on after bear season, kind of touch base and see, you know, you and I can talk bears and see how each of us did. And I think that might be cool.
It's a good idea.
Absolutely. Endless topics for sure. And I'll be doing as many Beyond the Grids as I can there on YouTube. And we got a few more coming out, and we should hunt together sometime too. Actually.
Yeah. I was thinking that, man, maybe I ought to get out there for Wyoming. Some bear.
Yeah, whatever you have up your sleeve. Like, I've hunted all over Wyoming, so if you elk or bear or deer or whatever, you let me know.
For sure, man. I appreciate that invite. Yeah, we'll have to sync on that for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, that'll be good, Dan. So for the listeners, where what are all the outlets that they can find you on?
Yeah, so I run the Beyond the Grid TV Instagram. I'm kind of active on there. But that on there, my personal page on there, Dan Picard, Facebook. Like I said, I don't spend a ton of time on that stuff. We have the Eastman's Hunting Journals channels, and we're doing a ton of stuff on YouTube. And like I said, I'm really busy with the Beyond the Grid. That's kind of our YouTube series, our digital series that I'm heading up, and I kind of, you know, produce that. And so that's what I'm most busy with. So yeah, check YouTube. That's where you can find the most of me for sure.
Excellent.
Keep up the good work, man.
I appreciate it. You too, Eric. You're slaying it out there too. I love seeing your stuff.
Thanks, man. Well, I don't know if I can keep up with you, but we'll,
I think you are. You're doing good, man.
He could keep up with you. He just wouldn't have a wife anymore.
Well, I'm already walking a fine line there. So
he's got to take trips to Hawaii to kind of smooth him back over.
Exactly. Yeah.
I thought I was good. I took her to Hawaii, and she turned to me and she says, "Hey, everyone, tell Dad thanks for this trip." Like, she was like sincere. I'm like, oh man, like, this is like her thank you for like all the sacrifice she made while we were out hunting. I'm like, man, that really like warmed my heart. I haven't felt something that sincere from her. We're home a week later, and she lit me up. I'm
like, wow. It's by no means like an extra count in brownie points. But no,
it was just that last 10 days.
yep.
That's funny, man.
Well, perfect, Dan. Well, hey, man, we appreciate you sitting down and chatting with us. And, man, we'll keep in touch.
My pleasure. Thanks for your time, guys.
Thank you.
Later, dude.